In a time when truth is censored, one name stands out. Dr. Sherry Tenpenny, the relentless seeker of knowledge and defender of freedom. Explore groundbreaking findings at drtenpenny.com. Ignite your mind with riveting podcasts, explosive articles, research-driven substacks, webinars, ebooks, and more. In an era plagued by environmental toxins and vaccine-related exposures, Dr. Tenpenny has expertly crafted a selection of safe detox protocols that facilitate profound healing at a cellular level. It's time to cleanse, rejuvenate, and restore your body vitality. With heart damage on the rise, Dr. Tenpenny introduces nationwide ECP therapy to repair hearts and achieve optimal health. Seize the opportunity and embrace the wealth of resources, information, and health recommendations awaiting you at drtenpenny.com and become a Tenpenny podcast member to join our mission in the quest for uncensored truth, the health of our nation, and medical freedom. Hello, everyone, and welcome to Morning Coffee with Dr. T. I hope you've RSVP'd to join us in our live studio audience so you can chat with our team and our guests. And a big welcome to all those joining in live on Cloud Hub and all our platforms. Together with our Tenpenny team, I'll be covering for Dr. T while she's away to give you a window into what our private team chats look like. If you've been in our live studio audiences before, you've caught some of our pre-show chatter over the years, and now you'll get the full experience. Today, we're going to chat with a powerful dad and warrior, Scott Shara. Scott is a nationally recognized expert commentator on the medical murder agenda in America and the dangers of incentivized healthcare. Scott's research proves that his practice of medical murder is intentional and by design. The father of Grace Shara, a 19-year-old with Down syndrome who was killed by St. Elizabeth's Hospital, Ascension Health, Scott is on a mission to spotlight the crimes of the American medical system. He has shared his insights, research, and personal story through hundreds of television, radio, and podcast appearances, and also hosts his own show, Deprogramming with Grace's Dad, which can be found on Rumble and all major podcast platforms. His landmark lawsuit in the murder of his daughter, Scott Shara versus Ascension Health AL, is underway in Wisconsin. Scott, welcome to Morning Coffee. It's truly an honor to have you with us.
Well, the honor's mine, Michelle. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. So, you know, I know your story, but I'd really like for you to tell it in your own words to our audience. I might break out into tears if I do that. And it hits home for me because I've had a similar story. So please, what happened to Grace?
Well, you know, I'm calling Grace's death murder, and you'll find out why as I share the short version of the story. We took her to the hospital on October 6th of 2021, and it was under, at this point, I was not awake, you know, other than we were awake to vaccines. So we had never vaccinated Grace with anything, but I was not awake to what was going on with COVID. So we had bought into the, you know, that this is a pandemic and the fear. And so that morning, Grace's oxygen dropped to 88%. How did we know that? Because we were monitoring it with a pulse ox. And that's one of the most important take-home messages I could share, because we had no business even owning a pulse ox. Why do I say that? Because we didn't have a baseline to go from. You know, when people, now that I understand it, when people get a cold or flu, their oxygen to drop into the high 80s is normal. But the FLCCC protocol at the time said that if your oxygen dropped below 94%, admit yourself to the hospital. So we dutifully did that. And, you know, 7 days later, Grace was dead. You know, so I know with 100% certainty, if we wouldn't have taken Grace to the hospital, she'd be alive. Why do I know that? Because I went to a different hospital 3 days after Grace died, and I just about died on October 16th. But that hospital turned me around in 24 hours. And it's because they didn't follow the regimen that they did with Grace. So it's critical that people understand that. So what happened, I give a relatively short version of this, Michelle, because we have a lot to talk about. But from the 6th until the 10th, I was with Grace in the room as her advocate. I did not really understand advocacy at that time. I really just thought, well, this is a hospital. It's not fun, but I'm there to just be there for my best buddy so she doesn't get lonely. So that was my perspective of advocacy. Right now, my perspective of advocacy is completely different. Of course, you need to be in the room, but you need to demand informed consent. And I didn't really, well, I didn't know anything what informed consent even means. Of course, I understand it from a lot of different levels now because of our lawsuit. So I really get it today. And it's critical that if you end up in a hospital that you have an advocate, the advocate understands your wishes through a medical directives document. That medical directives document is on your chart. Your chart is monitored, and that advocate demands informed consent with every single part of your care. And if all of, so again, just review, if I would not have taken Grace to the hospital, she'd be alive today. If I would have understood advocacy, she'd be alive today. And if I would have understood medical directives, she'd be alive today. There's absolutely no reason that she should be dead other than her death was a planned murder. And I can prove it quite easily. So now I was taken out, Michelle, on October 10th by an armed guard. At that point, we had 47 hours without an advocate in Grace's room. We had to hire an attorney to get my daughter Jessica in as a replacement advocate. My wife Cindy was really sick at the time, so she couldn't do it. During
So
that
why did they
40,
remove you?
well, they removed me because of the fact that I was challenging things the way I should, but I didn't bring it home. So I'll give you, well, I'll give you the specific offenses, and then I'll give you some examples. When the head nurse came in the morning of October 10th, she said, "You need to leave immediately." I said, "What's the reason?" She said, "The last three shifts of nurses don't want you in the room, number one. Number two is you've been shutting off the non-essential alarms at night." Or she said the alarms at night. And my challenge back was, I have been shutting off the non-essential alarms because the nurses trained me how to do it. Because, Grace needs sleep. These things are going off constantly. So they trained me how to shut off the non-essential alarms. And then third, she says, "We suspect you have COVID," which, I mean, what, that's a complete joke because they told me specifically, "I'm going to get COVID by being in the room with Grace." I said, "That's fine. It's an acceptable risk. I mean, I need to be here for my daughter." But the first offense is really what is the reason they took me out for. And so I was challenging things. So I'll give you a couple examples. The morning of October 9th, Grace is now on a BiPAP machine, which is ridiculous now that I see the crime. But I started feeding her. And Grace is super high functioning. Grace had Down syndrome, but I mean, she drove a car, she deer hunted, she did everything. So I mean, she could feed herself, but not with a BiPAP mask on. So I removed the BiPAP, I started feeding her, and the nurse came running in and said, "You can't do that." So I said, "Well, what's the reason?" She said, "Well, her oxygen's only at 85%. So they have a monitor. And I was watching that fairly regularly, but it was turned so that was facing the nurse's station so they could watch it through a window. So I thought to myself, that's impossible. She came in when we just had her on an oxygen cannula in the ER, she was in the high 90s. So how now? Now she's on a BiPAP and she's at 85. So I put the pulse ox, the same pulse ox that I was measuring Grace at home with, I put it on Grace and it read 95%. So I called the nurse back in and said, "Is my pulse ox reading accurate?" And she said, "Yes, it is." I said, "Well, what is the reason your machine's reading at 85% when mine's reading at 95%? And she said, "Well, the leads get sweaty." So then I said further, if that's a known, why aren't you proactively changing out those leads? Because this is the primary statistic you're using to manage my daughter's
Oh
care."
my God.
And she shook her finger at me and said, "You should just be thankful you caught this." So obviously they didn't like a dad in the room challenging things. It's interesting when you take a giant step back, Michelle, and I understand what happened with these hospital murders. Grace's story is extremely unique. One of the main reasons is we were in the room.
I was going to say that.
99.9% of these murders, nobody was in the room because they lied to people. Well, their protocol, you can't have people in the room. I mean, what a lie. But it's because of the goal. You can't have people in the room if you want to murder people. And then one more example I'll just give you because you asked the question is that the evening of October 9th, I was taken out the morning of October 10th. And I wanted Grace to be fed and they wouldn't let me feed her. So I said to the nurses, "Listen, Grace needs to be fed." And so they said, "Well, the doctor's not going to allow that." I said, "Listen, the doctor is not the one in charge of Grace's care. I am." And I said, they come in, the staff comes in. I explained this to the nurses. I said, the staff comes in because she has a BiPAP mask on and they moisten her mouth because it gets dry. So I said, how they do that is they remove the BiPAP, they put a cannula on and they moisten her mouth. And I said, I watched the oxygen. It's fine. Nothing is a problem with that. Well, the doctor will never allow it. And I said, listen, I want to talk to Dr. Beck. And Dr. Beck was the attending physician. And instead of Dr. Beck coming in and talking to me, I presume he's the one who ordered the nurse to come in with an armed guard and remove me instead. So, that's what happened with the armed guard situation. Then, my daughter, now we fast forward, my daughter Jessica's in the room. Grace, as we look at the records now, we see how they pulled this off. They started Grace on a sedation med called Presidex on October 9th. So now October 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th, that's 4 days. Grace's last day on Earth was October 13th. Presidex, according to the package insert, is only supposed to be used for 24 hours maximum, or it causes acute respiratory failure. It's not an option. It does cause it. It says it right in the package insert. If you looked at Grace's death certificate, Michelle, you'll see that the first cause of death listed is acute respiratory failure with hypoxemia. Hypoxemia means low oxygen. Well, they caused that. They literally caused it. Well, now we turn the page to the morning of October 13th. The doctor Shokar called Cindy and I at home, and the purpose of his call was to ask us for the fifth time if we would pre-authorize, so they could put it in Grace's chart, pre-authorize a ventilator just in case. I've become a full-time researcher and advocate. Well, I found out ventilators, I get it now. Ventilators should never be used with COVID. They have a 90% kill rate, but they also have a $300,000 payday to the hospital. So he's pushing us now for the fifth time to pre-authorize this. Well, I had done the ventilator research while Grace was in the hospital, so I knew we weren't going to do that. And I suspect he knew because it was the fifth time. So we said no, and he immediately switched gears and said, well, Grace had such a good day yesterday, we should work on nutrition, which we knew she had a good day in spite of being sedated. He says we should get her out of bed, watch TV, get everything moving so she can get out of here in the next 3, 4 days. Well, he was lying to us on the phone. Well, how was he lying? Because they had already strapped Grace down to the bed and made her defecate in the bed before he even got on the phone call with us. At 10:48, while he's on the phone with us, he ordered Presidex to the maximum allowable dose. We hung up at 10:55. At 10:56, he entered an illegal do not resuscitate order on Grace's chart. My suspicion is they thought the Presidex was going to take Grace out because, it was at the maximum allowable dose, but it didn't take Grace out. So they combined Presidex with lorazepam and morphine, which is what you do to take out hospice patients in their last hour of
Oh my
life on
God.
Earth. And of course, Grace didn't survive that. They did it in a 29-minute window. And how we ended up learning about Grace's DNR is now Jessica, she's in the room with Grace. She's feeling, she's right with Grace, holding her the whole time. Well, she doesn't know, none of us know these drugs are going into Grace. She feels Grace's skin's getting cold. She is asking the head nurse, whose name is Holly McGinnis. I bring up these names not because I want them to repent. I bring up the names because it is critical that people know the names of these murderers. Why? Because that's a way that you can protect yourself, and it's a way that we can stop the behavior. It's critical that people understand this. Holly McGinnis had 14 years of ICU experience. She's the one who executed all the orders. This is why I knew Grace was murdered, because in order for that med combination to happen, the doctor had to order the meds, the pharmacist had to sign off on the order. The alarms had to be overridden because those three meds are contraindicated. On the package insert for morphine, it says to not combine those meds because they can cause death. And if you do, you're supposed to keep the reversal drug bedside and monitor the patient. After they gave Grace morphine, no doctor or nurse stepped foot in the room. So, I mean, it's huge to understand this. And then last but not least, the fourth leg of that stool to murder Grace was the nurse had 14 years of ICU experience at that hospital. She was also an ICU nurse at other hospitals prior. So, I mean, it's no way this was a mistake. So Jessica's asking this nurse to come in the room, take a temperature. She said, well, that's normal that Grace would get cold. Just cover her with a blanket. By the time Jessica called us panicking, she said, Dad, Grace's numbers are dropping like crazy. I said, get the nurses in. She said, I've been trying. They won't come in. She estimated 30 nurses in the hallway at this point because of the shift change. And there was a guard posted outside Grace's door. So we started screaming, save our daughter. My wife, Cindy, and I on a FaceTime call, Jessica in the room, and they wouldn't come in the room. They hollered back from outside the room, she's DNR. And we hollered, she's not DNR, save our daughter. And we watched her die at 7:27 p.m. on October 13th of 2021. You know, and once I realized, you know, that's actually, I'm going to let you ask some questions now, because that's the very short version of the story, but it gets enough for you to get your arms around what happened.
Sorry, I need a minute.
Oh, I understand. When I came to grips with it, you know, it took me quite a while. I had about 500 hours of research in Grace's case, just focusing on Grace's case. I had already started interviews, but I was really zeroed in on Grace's case. And it took me about 6 months to figure out that she was murdered. And one of the key things that happened is a pharmacist stepped forward as a whistleblower. She had seen Grace's billboards on Gateway Pundit, and she has a Down syndrome daughter, and she got a hold of me and told me what's going on. She said, Scott, this is what's going on. And I won't sign these orders like they did with Grace. And so what they do is they wait to the shift change so that they can get a pharmacist to sign those orders, because I won't do it. And I said, are you going to speak out? And you know, she agreed. She's got to speak out because people's lives are at risk here. And so she decided to become an advocate, you know, just like I am. So it's fantastic that she did that. But I mean, her stepping forward and talking to me made me realize that it was murder. Well, then after you realize it's murder, you start, God gave me a researcher's heart. So you start, what is going on here? And that progression led to all kinds of things, including a lawsuit and everything else.
Scott, I don't know if you know, my father was murdered in a hospital, quite similarly, except we weren't allowed in the room. We had to, we protested outside. We had, within 24 hours, we had over 100 people protesting outside the hospital, all screaming, let her in, because they wouldn't let us in the room. And he went into the hospital. He didn't have COVID. He went into the hospital with a diabetic attack, but they wanted to call it COVID.
Absolutely.
And they wanted, there was an agenda. So I completely understand what you're saying. Long story short, I'll tell you, you know, he went in, when he went in, he was speaking to us. So when he got into the hospital, of course, I know exactly how that story goes, Scott. They start pushing the ventilator. They were screaming at my mother, telling her that she's going to kill him if she doesn't put him on a ventilator. And, you know, and we fought back, and we had lawyers, and we did everything we could. The problem is we couldn't get in, Scott. We couldn't get in the room. We couldn't help him. At one point, we FaceTimed with him, and all he could say, and he said it in Portuguese, but all he could say was, come here. You need to come here. And at one point, he tried to punch his nurses. So that's not a man who needs to be on a ventilator. If he's trying to punch his nurse, doesn't so need to be on a ventilator.
They put him on a ventilator?
We fought right till the end. And we said, no matter what you're going to do, you're not going to put him on a ventilator because it's against his wishes. He doesn't want to do it. And then we actually got in for about 15 minutes, couldn't get in the room, but they let us look at him from a window. And then that afternoon they called and said, we're going to let you and your mom come in one at a time. You can stay with him for half an hour. At this point, he was completely sedated. He was completely out. Scott, he didn't go in sedated. He was speaking to us when he got in the ambulance. And so you could see where that went, right? They wanted, of course, they, you know, no remdesivir, none of that, but we have no idea what they were doing. We do know that they starved him because we got that on record. So we know that much. and that they admitted they had no intentions for nutrition. And so, I mean, it was just the whole BiPAP thing. Like, his tongue was swollen. I don't even know how he could have breathed the way they had him on that. So I get this. And then they made us watch him die from a window. At one point, they actually said to me, "Ma'am, you can't go in his room. Your purse is over there." And I thought to myself, these people are so disconnected that they think we're concerned about the purse sitting on the table while my father is taking his last breath. And then after, I had to scream at them to let my mom in, at least, to hold his hand. And we were watching. We knew it was going. And so they finally opened the door and let her in. I said, "Well, now it's okay. An hour ago, you knew he was going to die, but it wasn't okay. But now it's okay." And their whole thing was, "Well, you might give him COVID." What?
Yeah,
He's dying.
it's insane. Yeah, it's
So I
somebody.
know this story way too well. And I think, Scott, it took a long time, and I've blocked that conversation off. Susan Sweeten asked me to have you on the show a while back, and I said I'm not ready, because I knew I was not going to make it through an entire conversation without crying. Because, Scott, this is not just you and me. This is not just my dad and Grace.
I know.
We've helped so many people since my dad's death, murder. So I'm thanking you so much for doing what you're doing.
It's humbling to be used by God for something as important as this. I've lost it a few times on interviews myself, and I miss Grace. She was my best buddy. People don't understand because most people, they set this up perfectly, including paying off families for burial expenses. We did not take the money because we knew we didn't want their dirty money. We knew something happened, and now I know what happened. And so to frame what you're saying, when did your dad die?
August 21.
Yeah,
August 2021.
this was the time frame, so everybody understands this was the time frame that the major push was happening for hospital murders. So I need to frame this whole thing a little bit
I'm
for people
sorry.
who are not
I'm
quite
not supposed to be the one breaking down on these interviews, Scott.
well. I mean, this is a big deal. So we start with there's four major lies with COVID. Okay. Obviously, we're calling it a plandemic or a scamdemic. So that's the first lie. This thing was a complete setup. Okay, so that said, all right, so then what's going on? They use the Hegelian dialectic model, problem, reaction, solution. So the solution was already designed in advance. They wanted everybody to take the bioweapon. All right, so then how do they do that? Well, so the first lie is that we have a pandemic. The second lie is this is a virus. So then why did they have to peddle that lie? I mean, we got to get through this, people. You got to realize that you've got to see COVID for what it is. They keep spinning these dialectics so that we keep talking about COVID, COVID, COVID. We can't keep talking about that because it's taking us our eye off what's really happening. So the second lie was a virus. It was not a virus. That's so easily proven. You can see how it was released along state lines, country lines, highways. I mean, so you can see this. I mean, it was not a virus, but they had to convince us it was a virus because then, it can spread. So then you got a lockdown. So they wanted lockdowns to happen. Okay, well then, in order to make this really full circle, they had to do the third lie, which is they had to create these hospital murders. And so why hospital murders? Because that creates the ultimate fear that you would want to have the bioweapon as your protection from dying in a hospital. Well, just process the fact that 1.2 million Americans were murdered in hospitals during the 39-month COVID era with the COVID as a diagnosis. All right. almost nobody died of COVID at home. So just wrap your head just around that. Now frame that 1.2 million murder number against all the countries on the planet. There's 200 countries on the planet. The United States was number one. Number one. How is that even possible? And
Yeah.
number two was India. India's population is four times that of the United States, and their death count was less than 50% of the United States. Okay, so now, whoa, something's going on, and the United States is in on it. In fact, we're the one who started the whole thing. All right, we got to come to grips with that. And so this quarter of what was going on in the fourth quarter of 2021, in January of 21, Brooke Jackson had already filed the False Claims Act lawsuit against Pfizer. So this was already known. It was already known that the vaccine was a lie. Okay, it's starting to get out in public. The government acknowledged in May of 21 already that the jab is going to cause myocarditis. And yet in the fourth quarter, so now they got to, oh my God, what happens if the population learns this? So they had to ratchet up the hospital deaths in that last time frame, from August when your dad died through January of 22. That's when the lion's share of these hospital murders happened. And they incentivized doctors in that fourth quarter. That's one of the slides that, Cookie could bring up if you can. It's called Paid to Kill. And so one of the slides I gave you is in the fourth quarter of 2021, I found this Blue Cross Blue Shield incentivized doctors who were taking care of patients under their plan in the fourth quarter. If they could convince 75% of their patients to take the jab in the fourth quarter, they would receive a $296,000 bonus. These family practitioners' base salary is $225 to $250. So they're more than doubling their income in the fourth quarter if they could just convince their members to take the jab. Well, pretty easy sale, right? But this is evil beyond evil. So anyway, I'm giving you some insight as to why I'm talking. I can't stop talking about this because if people are not awake to what's going on, they are doing their absolute best effort to get COVID, to have us focus on COVID first, and then to have COVID be, it was a mistake. And you see in our movement, Michelle, most of the talking heads are framing COVID as a mistake. It's really sick. I mean, just last week ago from Saturday, the first formal amnesty play was made. I was talking about amnesty 10 months ago. I said they're going to come up with amnesty. And now the first formal amnesty play was made that I found out about it a week ago this last Saturday. And we can talk about that also if you want, but we cannot have amnesty. Why? Because of what I just said. If this was a mistake, those four lies I just told you about would not be true. But those are four lies. They're absolutely true. Okay, so you can't have amnesty, period.
Yeah, we said the exact same thing months ago. Exactly the same thing. It was something that had come out in mainstream media, that had said, we're looking for amnesty. We didn't know. We did the best we could. No, you did know. Dr. Tenpenny wrote the 20 mechanisms of injury, and she released it. She started writing it before this, but obviously, but released it in April of 2021 after spending way more than 2,000 hours. I think we had calculated at that point close to 4,000 hours of research on this. And remember, Dr. T was researching this way before too, because she had been looking at this when SARS-CoV-1 was happening. So she knew already what was going to happen if they had released this shot into the public. And that's why she was talking about this in 2020. So, some people say, how could you possibly have talked about it in 2020? Well, because it's the same playbook, different story.
Exactly.
So she already had that background. So in January of 2021, she went on Renette Senem's show. That show went viral very, very quickly because she was talking about the first 7 or 10 that she had already discovered. And then by April, we talked about 20. And by July, we talked about 40. So by July, she released her second book, which was 20 more mechanisms of injury. She was talking about infertility, heart damage, organ failures, neurological damages, prion's disease. And I don't know if you've seen that in the headlines now, that how prion's disease is just rampant now in the States, right? And it's like,
Yeah,
well,
I have.
you don't say. She was talking about that in April 2021. So as the time went by, we did over 600 interviews in 1 year. And, as the time went by, we're slowly now seeing, like Epoch Times coming out and talking about things and other doctors coming forward and talking about things. And we're sitting back here going, we were screaming at the rooftops in April of 2021. With two ebooks and two live webinars. We did 2 hour webinars to educate people on this information. And yet it's suddenly a surprise, in 2022, and suddenly su more surprises in 2023. And now all these people asking, like you said, for amnesty now. It's like, how you knew. You
Absolutely.
knew. So what you're doing is you're asking for forgiveness for murder, and then you want to walk away and do this. And we've seen quite a bit of that, Scott. We've seen them admit to things and then say, so what? Look what was recently released about the SV40 and the shots. And what about the release of the ingredients and from the shot going all over the body, which we said? All of these things they admit to, and Scott, they do this and they say, so what? We're not changing anything. So,
That's right.
having
That's
gone through what you go through, Scott, tell us,
well,
how do you see some people moving forward without giving up the fight?
well, we can't give up the fight. I mean, first of all, we can't accept amnesty. Nobody can accept amnesty. I get, a widow, she's lost her breadwinner. So amnesty looks good because, the natural result of amnesty is a check. They want to pay people off. Okay. And you can't do that. You've got to say no. We've got to stand firm against this amnesty play because it's part of a much there's a much bigger it's a substantially bigger agenda. I see you have the amnesty slide up here. I just want to cover something if I can remember now. So what happens, Michelle, sometimes when you're 60 years old and I'm a man to boot, men can only do one thing at a time. So then if we get off, it's like, oh, what happened, right?
No worries. It
No.
happens to me too. No worries.
Yeah, I mean that stuff happens. Oh, I know what I wanted to do. So, Dr. Tenpenny, she's 100 times smarter than I could be on my best day. And so I have a very simple way to explain why we can't have amnesty. And I'm in the hospital murder lane for the most part. I spill over to the other lanes because you have to be educated. So I'm familiar with the things you just talked about. And you can see it was all pre-planned. But then if you think it through, COVID was officially 39 months long. If you and I, Michelle, were doctors on a COVID wing and we started using remdesivir and ventilators, so now we're not the wiser. We think it's a real pandemic, right? But all of a sudden we start using remdesivir, ventilators, and after 2 months we see all of our patients are dead. I wonder if there's other treatments, right? Wouldn't just your basic human curiosity
Your,
start
I
looking,
mean,
right? So
common sense would have taken you
right,
there.
you can't go on for another 37 months.
You
That
didn't need a
makes
PhD for that, for
right. You don't. So
that conclusion.
that's my simple version as to why you can't have amnesty for somebody who did this. Amnesty would have been applied after 2 months. It's like, oh my gosh, I killed all these people. I'm stuck, and lots of doctors and nurses did that. It's called quitting your job and speaking out and doing what's right. So, those people have the ultimate amnesty, which is from God, because I presume they repented. All right, so we can look at a couple of these amnesty slides if you would like, Cookie. You can bring up that first one.
And while she's pulling that up, I'll tell we had Dr. Farid, Dr. Tyson, and Dr. Shaw on our show in 2022, and they came on to talk about how they together had taken care of over 38,000 patients. None of them had died, and they had talked about their protocols. And then one of them, the FDA showed up at their place, and they were really excited, and they said, "Oh, I have all my paperwork right here. I'm ready to show them the evidence of how he saved all these people." And he said, "All they wanted to know was how many were positive. They were not interested in the solution." And that says everything.
Well, it does, right. And I do want to come back to your question after we're done talking about amnesty because of what you said, that they don't care. And the, you know, how has that been set up so they can even have this flippant attitude towards the truth? And that's the basis behind our lawsuit. And I want to get into that
Mass
after I talk
psychosis.
about amnesty. All right, so I'm going to read this. This is interestingly, this is from former feds, and I'm just going to say it's from former feds. I'm not going to talk about former feds right now, but that's where this came from. This is from their website. So I'm just going to read this, and then you can get the gist of how this is a convincing argument. So it's called the Amnesty and Leniency Program. The Amnesty and Leniency Program is endorsed by victims and survivors of COVID-related crimes against humanity who recognize that the malicious and powerful forces most responsible for their suffering and losses are not the ones who harm them directly. In an effort to incentivize whistleblowers to come forward, these victims are willing to grant those who abuse them or their loved ones the possibility of amnesty and leniency should those who have committed COVID crimes against humanity be brave enough to step forward and go on the record with their account. These victims will offer them grace. So you can see my analysis is over on the left-hand side. Satan weaves truth with lies, and that creates deception. Probably the biggest thing I've learned since Grace's death is how programmed I was in the world. I found out I was a Christian about 30 years ago, and yet the world really programmed me, and I didn't realize how much until I started seeing how Satan operates. So here's, Satan likes to take a little bit of truth and wrap it in lies. So when you just read that, it's, oh man, that sounds okay. So it says first endorsed by victims and survivors. Remember, you only have to have two to go plural, right? There's 1.2 million. So if two people agreed with this, that's all you need to make that claim. Okay. I don't agree with it. You don't agree with it. I'm not going to offer amnesty to the people who
That's
murdered my
right.
daughter. I offer them forgiveness, but that's not amnesty. Okay. So then it says, the people who are most responsible. So they presumably are talking about the Faucis of the world. Well, yeah, they are definitely higher up on the scheme, but how can you get more directly responsible than the one who pulled the trigger?
Pull the trigger.
Right? They pulled the trigger. Okay, so then third, do we need to honestly incentivize whistleblowers? What about the whistleblowers who have already come forward and quit their jobs? They weren't incentivized. They were incentivized by what we need to be incentivized by, which is the truth. And then
Exactly.
be brave enough is preying EY on a person's pride. So the only truth in this statement is these are crimes against humanity. That's the only bit of truth. And this is maybe the most important thing I could tell people is Satan has a methodology that he uses. So it's easy to understand this when you look at a coin. A coin has two sides, heads and tails. Well, Satan also has two sides. It's called evil and less evil. But less evil is always being framed as good. And it's not good. Only God is good. The less evil side is the false prophet side. And in September 11th is the easiest one to explain what I'm talking about. So with September 11th, they framed it that, this is evil, right? Which it was evil. September 11th was evil. Of course, they're not acknowledging the United States is the one behind September 11th, but I'm not going on that rabbit trail.
Yeah,
So,
that's a whole other interview.
right, that's a terrible, right. So we'll just take September 11th as an evil action. Okay, well, the solution, the Patriot Act, was already in play before the event happened. So why did we fall trapped to the Patriot Act? Well, because our country was attacked. I mean, it's oh my gosh, the fear. So you have problem, the attack, the reaction, the fear, the solution, the Patriot Act. So why do we fall for the Patriot Act, which took away an innumerable number of rights from us? Why do we fall trapped for that? Because we always fall trapped for security, safety, and comfort. And that's Satan's less evil side. So that's the other shoe that's going to drop here is false prophets are already rearing their head. I'm going to be doing a monocast on this tomorrow because it's such a big deal. I want to point out to anybody that's willing to hear that these false prophets, we're seeing it with the idea of a parallel allopathic system. Well, that doesn't work. The allopathic system is evil, so a parallel allopathic system is just less evil, right? So anyway, that's my rant about the amnesty and where that's going.
And I'll just add to that, I hate to say it, but we've heard the phrase before. I was just taking orders. I was just
Yep,
doing my job.
Nuremberg won, and it was obviously the outcome of Nuremberg was that is not following orders cannot be used as an excuse. And Nuremberg too, I just want to give a warning for Nuremberg too, because there's false prophets already talking about Nuremberg too. I would be personally for Nuremberg too, but we have to get there the right way. So just talking about Nuremberg too as a solution is not the right way. And the right way means that we acknowledge how we got here, and we got here by rejecting God. That means the only way to get to Nuremberg too is acknowledging our rejection of God and repenting. Now Nuremberg too makes sense, but Nuremberg too under the false prophet flag does not work. You have to get there the right way, which is through repentance.
I agree. And that's one thing that we haven't seen too much of. We
Yeah.
see the please forgive me, give me amnesty, or I didn't know, or we did the best we could, we thought we were helping. We get all that. We
That's
don't
right.
get a lot of the repentance, like, dear God, what have I done?
That's exactly right. And I want if every single doctor and nurse repented, just take the ones in the hospital Grace was murdered at. If they repented, guess what? There's not going to be any more murders in that hospital. So, I mean, that would be the fastest solution. I mean, we have this lawsuit, which, so I want to just dive into that. I know
Yeah,
we don't have a lot of
please do.
time left, but the reason this whole medical industrial establishment is so arrogant about these murders is because you cannot hold them accountable. When I grew up, the adage, you can't fight City Hall and blah blah blah. And I'm realizing what that looks like with a lawsuit. And that lawsuit, we filed our lawsuit on April 11th. I never thought we'd file a lawsuit. We promised, my wife and I promised God that when we stepped into this fight, that because we thought we were called to do that, we just said, whatever doors you open, we'll walk through. And the lawsuit door opened. And the reason I thought we would never file a lawsuit is because early on, I had talked with a partner in a 300 partner law firm, and I shared Grace's story in the records. This is after I realized she was murdered. And he said, Scott, you have a huge case here. He said, I want you to meet the best medical malpractice attorney in Wisconsin. So I did. And so him and I talked over the phone. And he said, Scott, even in slam dunk cases like this appears to be, we only have a 1 in 10 chance of winning. I said, why is that? He said, I'll share an example with you. He said, I represented a family where the husband died and he had a sponge sewed up inside of him as part of the surgery, and we lost the case. So how is that possible? He said, I brought in 10 experts and they brought in 100. They circle the wagons around their own. So consider we're up against Ascension Hospital System, plus the five doctors and two nurses who are directly involved with Grace's death. Think about how much money they have. Plus, they have insurance policies that are paying all their legal bills. We're paying our legal bills out of pocket. So they're trying to bankrupt us, in the process because they can, right? And we don't even have the trial yet. The trial, by the way, is set for. We have the first jury trial in the country with a death that was a hospital murder in the COVID era. And it starts, miraculously the day before the presidential election. We have a 3-week jury trial. So this is huge. Well, now you drill down. How did they pull this off? Well, there's state statutes that really prevent you from suing. So first, remember the 1 in 10 chance of winning. Okay. Because they're bigger than us, right? Try to sue the US government, right? Good luck. It's not going to happen. Look at Brooke Jackson. I know the lead or one of the lead attorneys in the Brooke Jackson case is our attorney.
Warner.
Yes, I mean I know Warner well, and it's frustrating. I mean, you can't get justice, all right, because they're bigger than us. All right, so in Grace's case, the state statutes, and I'm going to talk about Wisconsin, but there's parallels in all the states. The medical malpractice limit is of an award is 750,000. That's the max you can win with a medical malpractice case. All
Oh.
right, so 1 in 10 means 75,000. If you're right, you got to look at it, 75,000.
Yeah.
Well, the out of pocket with a just a straight med mal case, the out of pocket cost for experts and legal fees is between 250 and $300,000.
Wow.
Right. Our case is quite a bit bigger because we have eight defendants and we have the first medical battery claim that's going to be heard by a jury. So this is huge. And so our out of pocket is expected to be about 700,000. So you just, who's going to do that? Right. So that's why they're so arrogant, is that they know they're untouchable. The state statute not only protects them with the damage amount, but here's another interesting thing. What is, again, you and I are doctors now, Michelle, and we think, well, yeah, I mean, we believe in informed consent. Why do we believe informed consent? Because God says it. Treat your neighbor as yourself. Wouldn't you want your patient to know everything that's going on, right?
Absolutely.
Well, they don't do that. They don't do that. And the state statute gives them the license to pull this off. So in Wisconsin, there's an informed consent statute. And it lays out, if you read it, you think, well, that's pretty logical, but it's not necessary. Why? So why did they even put it in place? Because so the statute is 448.30 in Wisconsin. They did it because they wanted to implement 448.40, which is the teeth of the statute. So if you have a claim against a doctor for lack of informed consent, you take it to the medical examining board. Well, that sounds okay, right? Other than when you peel back the layers, you see that the medical examining board is made up of 10 doctors and three lay people. So
It's a
this is
monkey
like the
core.
police officer giving his buddy a speeding ticket. Not going to happen, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, that's my rant on, I'm thankful God opened up the door. We're walking through it. We realize that we have submitted to the Antichrist legal system, but we're using the lawsuit to shed light on evil. We've already said if we win any money, it's getting plowed back into this fight because that's not our goal. We're not trying to get money. The neat thing about our medical battery claim, the judge allowed that to be heard on the hearing on October 30th, a month and a half ago. And so that's critical. It's the first one in many, many decades where we're going to have a real medical battery, which means intent. They intended to kill Grace. All right, so we get a chance to prove that, and the whole world gets to see it. Well, the beauty of that claim is that more attorneys, if we win, more attorneys will take on these cases. Why? Because there's punitive damages once you can prove intent. So now those state statutes with the $750,000 limit no longer apply.
Wow, you have quite a battle ahead of you, but I don't see a better person for it.
Well,
Scott,
I'm sure there's a lot of better people,
no,
but
I mean you are powerful in your word of God. You're putting that forward, face forward. You're making sure that Grace's death was not in vain. Maybe the only comfort we have, Scott, is to think that this was their journey. They were put here, to be with us for us to completely enjoy them while they were here. But their journey was to do this so that we could help others and that we can raise, the bar and we can shed the light and we can, really expose what's happening. It's probably the only comfort. You might agree
Well,
with me on
I
that.
agree. When God gave me the ability to compartmentalize the story, and so when I compartmentalize it, I can see what you're saying. When I have to walk through the events that Grace's memory,
Happen.
but those are tough. But I mean, I see
Those are
great.
tough.
God is sovereign. All right, so start with that as a truth. So that's a truth you can stake your life on. So God is sovereign. That means that. There's nothing now that, after the fact, while you're in it, you don't realize what's going on.
Yes.
But after the fact, I can look at the mistakes I made. If I would have just done this, Grace would be alive. Well, that's not true anymore because Grace is dead. So once she's gone, that was her death date predestined by God. And God is sovereign. So that means that now, what do you do with that? She
What do you do with
died
it?
for
Yeah.
a reason. And I know at least short term what the reason is to light a fire under my butt to get me out and talk to people and save lives. I just received Kate Daly that text or emailed me last night. There's a man, I don't know where he's from. I texted, called, and emailed him this morning because he emailed me. He's got a 19-year-old Down syndrome girl named Grace. And she got vented on the 7th, so he wants help. And so
Oh my
hopefully he's
gosh.
gonna be I'll be able to connect with him today because you think about that. How did she even get vented? She just went in with pneumonia. How did she get vented? And it's because we have been programmed to trust the white coat. And we have to deprogram ourselves. The single most important thing people could do to protect yourself from the hospital, it's laugh, you think, well, don't go in. Yeah, well, I get that. But the most important thing you could do to protect yourself is to change your belief. If you believe that the hospital is a safe zone, you're going to lose your life. If you believe that they're part of the agenda to depopulate the world, now you have a mindset that you can become prepared for a hospital stay.
And educate yourselves. It's
Absolutely.
so important to educate yourself. We have a sister company, Scott, called learningforyou.org, learning the number 4YOU.org. And it is set up there so that people can educate themselves. It's so important to not just hear it, go and learn it, really learn it, so you can be articulate in what you're saying. You can really back up your position. It's important, when you walk into a position, especially if you've heard it, but you're not educated on it, you walk into a si situation like that still vulnerable, because you don't know the language, you don't know the background, you don't have the research, but you walk in with strength in your education. That's powerful. And
Bingo.
you mentioned earlier too, you mentioned about how you became an advocate and you didn't even know you were an advocate in her room. You were there, excuse me, sorry. You were there to be supportive to your daughter, but you didn't realize that you were actually becoming her advocate. So many people who have reached out to us have asked for that kind of support. Where do they get that kind of support? Where can they get an advocate? The truth is too, when you're sad, when you're stressed, when you're sleep deprived, when it's your own flesh and blood going through that, you need that extra support. It's you just do. You need that support. We've been lucky enough to work with a group called Graith Care. That's Graith. So for anyone out there who's listening to this, if you're in that situation and you need that patient advocate, you need that support, I've used them. I actually used them recently with when my brother was admitted into the hospital for a severe brain injury. I've used them. So please go, if you can't remember that name, go on to drtenpenny.com, and in the more section, so we have tabs across the top. If you go to the more section, under there we have patient advocate. So you can just click on that and it'll take you to the patient advocate. Or you can use our bit.ly link, which Diane's going to put up here too. It's bit.ly/Graith, Graith. So that's a way that you can, find some support for you should you ever be in the position that Scott and I were in, and you need that extra support. And I suggest you do it anyway, because I think I'm a pretty good patient advocate. But there's nothing like having that secondary hand. And these are people who are nurses. They're nurses. They understand the language, and they're going to be specific to your state. So they'll also understand, the laws and the administration. So it's really helpful. Don't hesitate on that. If you have a loved one that's going in, make sure that you get a team. You need a team. You need a team. You never want to have to go into the hospital, so we try to find everything that we can do without going in. I think we're anybody on this call is probably aware of that at this point. But if you have no choice, then please get an advocate to help you through. Scott, is there anything that you'd like to? Did we go through all your slides before we close
I
off?
would
I want to
like,
make sure.
there's one that I would like to share. Cookie, could you bring up the 1967 plan to depopulate? This is why we've got to, well, it's not why, but it's proof as to why we need to get off of COVID. This game plan, so I'm going to frame this. I think I in my email I sent to you, Michelle, I mentioned that I put together a series called Medical Murder is the Number One Cause of Death in the United States by Design. And if anybody's interested in that, it's all up now on Rumble. We on Grace's main website, ouramazinggrace.net, on the left-hand side, there's a big tab announcing it. It's a seven-part series. I put it together. You know, it was on my mind, and I thought, boy, you know, I'm a high-value target. I want to get all this stuff that I have researched and put it all in one place. So the reason it's seven parts is I approached it like a research paper. So I did who, what, where, why, when, how, and then part seven is now what. Assuming you believe that medical murder is the number one cause of death by design, what are you going to do about it? So that's the seven-part series. Well, this document is quite interesting. If you start framing what's been going on, and you know, the current agenda to depopulate, I trace back to the beginning of the 1900s, and that's when the euthanasia, not euthanasia, the eugenics agenda was really the modern day eugenics agenda was started by the United States. Well, then Adolf Hitler adopted that eugenics philosophy. The United States does what we always do, which we point the finger at him, you know, naughty for wanting eugenics. But then through Operation Paperclip, we sneak back the 1600 top eugenicists from Germany in the United States to get things going, you know, on steroids. And COVID is part of that agenda. This, you know, back in 1968, and that's why I'm gonna get to this document. Then in 1968, I went to kindergarten. You know, and God gives us certain memories of things, and you know, I know why he gave me this memory, because you know, I re had remembered it my whole life. I thought, well, I wonder why they did that. And you know, now that I see what's going on, I see why they did that. Well, what's that? Well, the Weekly Reader in 1968 was programming 5-year-olds that they said specifically, if you have more than two children, it's irresponsible. And if your parents have an electric can opener, that's irresponsible because it's using resources we don't have. So all the way back to 68, they were implementing the
Wow.
population control and climate control agenda. Well, where did that come from? Well, this 67 plan to depopulate the United States is the first smoking gun document I could find that put in writing the plan in the United States to depopulate us. And you start looking at this, you see, oh my gosh, yeah, this is all, you know, I highlighted a few things for your audience. So, you know, encourage increased homosexuality. You know, back in the 60s, I mean that you can't grasp that concept. Fertility control agents in the water supply. So just process how 80% of the population is subject to the public water supply. 80% of the population in the United States. So think about how much control they have of us, how much they can eliminate the population at the flip of a switch. So anyway, this document gets people a teaser into the medical murder series, and I'd encourage everybody to watch it. It will get you to the point where you realize, oh my gosh, we've been programmed for a long time, and it's our responsibility to deprogram ourselves. That's why my podcast is called Deprogramming with Grace's Dad. Once you come to grips with that, you've been programmed. Okay, well, now it's your responsibility to be deprogrammed.
Absolutely. So just to repeat for the audience here, in case they didn't hear it, the website where they can find all this information is ouramazinggrace.com. Is that right?
.net.
.net, excuse me,
.net.
ouramazinggrace.net. So if Diane can put that up on the video there for everybody, that'd be really great. And we'll put it up on the description as well, so people just click on it and get to you. And you mentioned you are on Rumble. Your show on Rumble is
Deprogramming with Grace's
Deprogramming with
Dad.
Grace's Dad. Do you have your program on CloudHub yet?
I don't know. Maybe.
I'll send you the details for that. You should definitely put it on there. You can have an entire channel as well as a forum. So if you can imagine, it kind of works a little bit like having a Facebook and a YouTube channel, right? So you have a forum section, and then they can click and go right into your channel, and everything is there.
Oh, that would be great. I'm somebody else handles all that.
Oh, okay. Get me in touch with
You know, so
them, and
if you
I'll
don't send it, I'll just send it to the producer.
yeah,
Uh,
it's
if you send
great.
it to me, because he handles that. I mean, my daughter handles the Facebook page. You know, that's I'm I, first of all,
You show up.
I don't want to learn it, but it would also take away from what I'm doing.
Exactly, yes.
I'm
I'm glad you
about
have a team.
20% of my time is working on the lawsuit. Roughly 50% is researching, and then the balance is interviews. And you know, I don't have time to be farting around with Facebook and all that other
Exactly.
stuff.
I'm so glad you have a team, Scott. And I just want to read you here a comment from our chat real quick. It says, ouramazinggrace.net is full of information. Thank you.
I have somebody we hired to do the website, but I mean, I have put 100% of the content on the website. Yeah, that is, it's a big deal. There's a whole resource section, you know, just like Dr. Tenpenny. I mean, she's, you know, of course, a better resource than I am. You know, so I'm going to look up this learning for you when we're done, and it would make sense that I link to that as a resource on Grace's website also.
Yes. And we'll put this up, and this is going to go on Rumble as well, and it's going to go on Cloud Hub for sure, and throughout our emails. This is a story that everybody needs to hear. So again, I thank you. I thank you. And oh, Cookie. Oh, thank you, Cookie.
That's my favorite picture of Grace. And I'll just share this story. And this is also, we have another website that's a landing page for people to sign up to follow us. It's graceshera.com. And yeah, you got it right
There it
there.
is.
So this picture, the reason it's my favorite picture is not only is because my beautiful daughter looks beautiful, but this is the day I stopped being a lawn Nazi. So we have a 7-acre lawn. And you know, it's got all the dandelions. I thought, you know, I got to kill these things, right? Well, then Grace comes in with that beautiful bouquet for mom. I thought, oh my gosh.
Oh.
Yeah, so she had a way of changing your perspective on things, and you know, just her bringing that bouquet, and I stopped killing dandelions that
Oh, I love it. I
day.
love it. And you're saving the bees by doing
Yeah,
that.
exactly.
Oh, she's beautiful. She's
Thank you.
beautiful. My heart goes out to you and your family and everyone that has gone through the same thing, Scott. And you're a blessing. So I thank you so much for everything that you're doing and that can continue to do. And please keep being the warrior that you are because we need you. The world needs you, and like I said, I think that there's a reason for all. As difficult as that might be, there's a reason for what's happened to Grace, to my dad, and to so many others that have gone through the similar story. That gone through the similar story, and let them be the voice for all of them,
Yeah,
for everyone.
we really need to remember that this was their goal.
Exactly.
These protocols are still going on. Like I told you, I just got an email from a man with a Down syndrome daughter. They vented her. 2 weeks ago, there was another 19-year-old with Down syndrome who lost her life in Madison, Wisconsin. About 2 months ago, a 56-year-old with Down
Oh,
syndrome
gosh.
in the same hospital that Grace was in. It has nothing to do with Down syndrome, but it, you know,
But what a coincidence. But quite a
I have a
coincidence.
very specific interest in the Down syndrome community because of Grace's Down syndrome. But it is because, you know, there's a depopulation agenda. And, you know, the Down syndrome people, the elderly people, those are the ones that they have convinced the medical industrial complex need to go. Why? Because Obamacare was written from the perspective that if you're a non-contributing member of society, you don't deserve medical care. So that is the programming that the medical profession has received. So don't think you're exempt for this. If you're on Medicare and Medicaid, you're the low-hanging fruit and you've got to go first. But
Well,
remember.
in Canada, they're offering people who suffer from mental illness and depression euthanasia.
Correct.
So, I mean, it's an interesting world. And I used to work for the Special Olympics, Scott.
Oh,
So,
wow.
yeah, so I did a lot of work with with people with Down syndrome, and that's pretty close to my heart too. So
Oh,
yeah,
you
when
must have had a blast with that.
they are amazing. They listen, I used to teach. I was in university, and I was teaching high school swim club, and I was teaching the Special Olympics swim club. And man, they worked a hell of a lot harder, let me tell you. I used to come back to the high school kids and like, you have no idea. Like, I give these guys instructions and they do it, and they do it well. I come here and I hear, oh. They were incredible athletes and incredible people. And yeah, so Grace has that little special thing for me, on two accounts. So thank you for that, Scott. Thank you.
Thank you, Michelle. Thanks for
And
having me today. This was really nice.
yes, absolutely. It's my pleasure. I'm glad I finally got the courage to get you on, Scott. And I only cried for 5 minutes. So,
Yeah, we did okay.
but Dr. Tenpenny has a verse that she always closes all her shows with, and I'm going to close that. And it has some extra special meaning today, Scott. And this is Romans 12:12. Rejoice in hope, be patient in trouble, and be persistent in prayer. So God bless you. God bless you on your fight. God bless you on this path. And we're working through him, right? So may his work shine through what you're doing. Thank you so much. God
Thanks,
bless you.
Michelle.
And thank you for everybody who's here with us. So stay through. Make sure you sign up for next week's show. We have Dr. Eric Naputi joining us on that show. That'll be really fun. And for those of you who are not able to tune in, have a very Merry Christmas. I hope you will be with us next week, but if you're not, please enjoy your holidays. We love you all, and we're very really excited to have Dr. Tenpenny come back with us here in January too. We'll talk about that soon. But stick around for the next few minutes to listen to our announcements. We're going to share some of our favorites with you that if you've been in our newsletters, you've seen our beautiful newsletters that came out. We share only what we use for ourselves, and we want the best for you and your families. So we want to share this with you too. So once again, Scott, thank you. God bless you. And we hope to bring you back on soon. Dr. Tenpenny wants you to come back and do a deep dive. So I'll call you about that as well.
Okay, well, that would be great. Thank you.
Have a great day. Thank you again.
All right, bye.
Bye bye.
Zeolite is a detox spray. We work specifically with a company called Touchstone Essentials. They are an incredible company. We've been working with them now for several years. And zeolite is a mineral that goes through your body like a one-way basket. It will clean out heavy metals such as arsenic and mercury, aluminum, cadmium, and it hooks onto those metals from a one-way perspective. So once it's bound, it goes out through your urine or your stools and doesn't get redeposited in other places. Everybody needs to have a detox product in their life, and this one is so easy to use and it's so safe. You can take it when you're pregnant, you can take it when you're nursing, you can give it to little children, you can even give it to infants, and quite frankly, I give it to my dog. I actually put a little bit of the zeolite in his water because until we all stop living in a toxic world, we all need to get some of those extra toxicities out. The heavy metals, the persistent organic pollutants, the things that are floating through the air, the different things that we come in touch within our environment. And we are a big fan of zeolite from Touchstone Essentials. We've been a big, big, big fan of their products for several years.
Go to drtenpenny.com/detox to get your first bottle of zeolite spray for $50 off.
We also have an apparel line on our store that has just the best things. In fact, I go and shop at my own store. I mean, I really do go and buy stuff out of my own store. They have t-shirts and sweatshirts and cups and mugs and totes. We've got a great designer. We're always adding new things all the time. And either one of those two product lines, either our private label supplements, our OptiLine, the white bottles with the green leaves on it, or with the apparel store, and they're two separate stores. They do not have a single shopping cart. It's like you go in one store and get your groceries and you go to the other store and get your shoes. Well, these are two separate stores, but you can use the same affiliate code. If you use the code podcast, when you go to the checkout, you can get 10% off on everything you buy every time you go to the store. Gold and silver always has value. It never goes to zero. And it's a great place to store your wealth. It's a great place to have it for inheritance, for your children, for your grandchildren. And when you can actually get the coins itself, when you can actually do that, You can actually even have a coin collection. I think that some of the older Walking Liberty silver dollars are just amazing, that come from the early 1900s. And I think that everybody should have some of those, not only for history, but as a place to protect your wealth, protect your money going forward. It never goes to zero. Like our paper fiat money with hyperinflation and the things that we may be seeing in the future, our dollar could literally go to zero, could be worth nothing. You might even not even be able to barter with it, but you will always have value in gold and silver. You'll always be able to eat with it. You'll be able to trade with it. And it's a great place to store your wealth. Particular company that we work with, because we really, again, trust their product. We believe that this company has a high level of integrity and they are great with customer service. To learn more, go to bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT. That's bit.ly/gold-silver-DRT.